Even the world of professional sports had a holiday warm fuzzy yesterday. A player who almost died and was thought to have to spend the rest of his life paralyzed was able to walk into a stadium and watch his team. Well, they lost, but that's not the point. It was a game, after all, to help decide a championship. Watching it together, I was wrapping presents on the floor by the tree while my husband's on the couch where he yelled, "Eli, what are you doing?" As opposed...
That's not his pet name for you.
No, that's Eli Manning he was talking about. Bill Wolf, my husband, is the rest of the world, the former disembodied voice from ESPN's Around the Horn.
Well,
hi, hon.
A very small part of the rest of the world, yes.
By the way, thanks for waking up to help us out. This is your day off, and we appreciate that.
Are you kidding me? A day without the Bryant Park is not a day at all. Come on.
It was an emotional game on Sunday. Seriously, we were watching it. A little bit of backstory for people who don't remember this. 25-year-old Buffalo Bills player Kevin Everett on September 9th tackled another player. His helmet hit the other player's shoulder pad with such a force that Everett was paralyzed from the neck down. He was on life support. How unusual was this injury, and how unusual is the recovery?
Well, what was unusual was the verbiage from the medical people who were attending to Kevin Everett, who said they thought he might die. I mean, he was in a life-threatening situation. Usually when these spinal cord injuries happen in football, you just rarely hear that it's a life or death situation. You generally hear that paralysis is likely, but you rarely hear that they're not sure the guy is going to live. The instances are amazingly rare given how violent football is, but you know, there have been some famous cases of guys who've been paralyzed for the rest of their lives and disabled by football injuries. It happens every couple of years, but this recovery is, I've never heard of such a thing, that within 4 months of a guy, reported to be literally hanging on for dear life to his life, is walking around and made it all the way to Buffalo from Houston, where he is convalescing, and walked into the locker room yesterday. It was great stuff.
As somebody watching the game, did it add another layer to the game for you?
Oh, no question. In fact, I TiVo'd the game just in case there would be these compelling pictures that I'd want to watch over and over again and bring myself to tears. those pictures did not exist, but there was no doubt that the fact that this guy made it back to Buffalo, where they love their football team and they love this guy, added a layer of emotion, and I sort of watched, hoping that Buffalo, the Bills football team, would come up with a superhuman effort against the New York Giants and win the game for Kevin Everett, because I am a sap, as you well know, and it looked good early. Buffalo ran out to an early lead, but ultimately the Giants simply have better players and beat Buffalo.
And they beat them 38-21. And it kind of happened late in the game.
Yep.
That the Giants came back. Are they known for the sort of these late game rallies?
They are. They have your friend Eli Manning, who's the quarterback, who's the younger brother of the impeccable Peyton Manning.
Okay, we have to stop for a minute. We're watching the game, and Eli Manning just basically drops the ball, goes do-de-do. He's the quarterback.
Yep.
And then what comes on right after?
An ad with Peyton Manning being excellent and perfect.
Oh,
do you really want to be the brother of the prom king with the pretty girlfriend, and you're just kind of a nice guy, but you're not your brother? His big brother is so excellent, and poor Eli lives in that shadow. But he always starts the game poorly, always. And then, generally speaking, the Giants win. They've got 10 wins and only 4 losses. So for as bad as Eli has been, and by the way, he was awful yesterday, his team keeps winning. So he's under an enormous amount of scrutiny, Eli, because his brother is Peyton and because Eli was the number one pick in the draft and all that sort of stuff.
And he made all these demands, right?
Well, when he was going to be drafted by the San Diego Chargers, and his camp, led by his father, Archie Manning, said, "We don't want to play for the San Diego Chargers. So if you, San Diego, draft us, we're simply not going to play for you. We're going to hold out." And he forced San Diego to trade the rights to draft Eli to the Giants. So he was thought to be a little precocious as a college senior coming into the professional ranks. And so a lot of people were predisposed to not want to like him. You would call those player haters, I think, in the trade. And people love to hate on Eli. People love to find fault with Eli. And it's fairly easy to do just by the look of him and by his statistics. But his team's pretty good. They're ten and five. I think that's not bad. 10-5.
Now Green Bay got whomped yesterday. Just whomped by the Chicago Bears, 35-7.
And whomped.
Brett Favre came on the TV. He said it was cold. This is his quote: "I've been playing 17 years, and that was the worst conditions I've played in. Excuse or no excuse, it was cold, cold as hell. I'm not going to lie to you. I still haven't thought out." Doesn't he come from someplace cold?
Yeah, cold country, right?
He's in Green Bay.
I mean,
isn't that much cold? Were they in Chicago when they played?
They were in Chicago, and it was blowing about 40 miles an hour with like ice pellets going sideways into your face. It was really bad in Chicago. Remember, the stadium in Chicago, Soldier Field, is near the Lake Michigan shore, and the wind comes whipping off that lake, and it is something else at Soldier Field. When it gets bad, it gets really bad. But, Allison, you are correct. He plays in Green Bay, where one Thanksgiving I was there, and it was like -4 on Thanksgiving. And so for him to say this, these were the worst conditions he ever played in is quite a statement. He knows from bad conditions. But they got whomped.
Well, it's probably the worst conditions the Bears have played in, too.
Well, if it's the worst conditions Brett Favre ever played in,
think about that.
It's probably some of the worst conditions anybody's ever played in, because that guy's made a career playing in bad conditions.
But we do have to be fair, though. He did give the Chicago Bears props. Let's listen to a little bit of Brett Favre after the game.
It was hard to catch the ball quickly in the shotgun and get it out quickly. And there was really no one ever wide open. So they did a good job of it. I guess without looking at the film, our execution was not at a level that it has been in the past. But, I give them more credit than I take from us.
Now, this is a really big bummer for the Green Bay Packers, because they can't be number one in their division. And then they lost something else aside from the game, right?
Well, it has to do with playing conditions. If the Packers and the Dallas Cowboys have been competing all season for the best record in their conference. And the reason that's significant is when you get to the playoffs, the tournament that starts a week after next, the team with the best record in the conference gets to play all of its playoff games for as long as it keeps winning at home. And if Green Bay is able to have the best record and play all of its playoff games at home, that they are considered to have a tremendous advantage, because they're used to the hideous conditions, the freezing cold that generally happens in January. And so the visiting team in Green Bay is always at a distinct disadvantage. By losing yesterday to the Bears, the Packers lost the home field advantage, and they gave it to Dallas, to the Cowboys, so that if Green Bay goes on through the playoffs to reach the conference championship for the right to go to the Super Bowl, the game would be played, presumably, if Dallas continues to win, in Dallas and not in Green Bay. So it is potentially a big deal that they lost yesterday.
Now, the Mitchell report just keeps on going. This thing will not fade. One of the reasons is many of the players are coming out. Roger Clemens has said, the Yankee pitcher, that he issued a strongly worded denial via the internet. So let's listen to a piece of that.
And let me be clear, the answer is no. I did not use steroids, human growth hormone, and I've never done so. I did not provide Brian McNamee with any drugs to inject into my body. Brian McNamee did not inject steroids or human growth hormones into my body either when I played in Toronto for the Blue Jays or the New York Yankees. This report is simply not true. I'm angry about it, to be honest with you. It's hurtful to me and my family, but we're coming upon Christmas now, and I have been blessed in my life. I've been blessed in my career, and I'm very thankful for those blessings.
So does this come down to the trainer's word? I mean, could Clemens have gotten steroids or HGH without his knowledge or his consent?
It comes down to Roger Clemens' word versus his trainer's word. That's exactly what it comes down to. And there is each of those guys has motive to say what he has said. The trainer was under scrutiny, and I think his cooperation with George Mitchell was part of he's trying to stay out of prison and trying to stay out of trouble. And Roger Clemens obviously has his legacy and his career at stake. So it's a toss-up. I mean, who's telling the truth? You listen to Roger Clemens talk, he sounds pretty certain, and he's speaking in such explicit and unambiguous terms that you'd think to yourself, well, if he's going to say it like that, he must be telling the truth, because if he's wrong by even a little bit, those words will come back to haunt him. So why would he do such a thing? It's the problem of the steroid era. You don't know who to believe.
Right.
And that's the problem. If it were clear who had cheated, if it were clear who had done wrong, then it would be bad, but we could move on quickly. Now there's going to be a cloud of suspicion and doubt over every player who played in the era, including Roger Clemens.
You'll understand this. The bottom clock has just hit zero.
Oh, no.
Oh, no. Bill Wolf,
sports
guy, husband,
my God.
And sometimes BPP co-host fill-in. Thanks, hon.
And Merry Christmas to the BPP community.
Merry Christmas.